So, good morning everybody and welcome to Tips and Tricks for Creating Custom Manager Packs for Microsoft System Center Operations Manager. Probably one of the longest titles that you'll find at TechEd. So, I'm Mickey Gousset. I'm a principal consultant at InFront Consulting Group. Some information about me. I've got my email address. I'll be glad to give you a card afterwards. You're more than welcome to send me an email anytime you want to. I'm up on, you can find me on Twitter. I'm starting to get back into that. I'm actually an ALM MVP. So I'm an Application Lifecycle Management MVP. So I used to deal a lot with Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio, and I still do for fun. But my day job, I do System Center. So I do System Center consulting and training on all the different products. My specific focus is Operations Manager, Manager Pack Development, System Center Service Manager, and Orchestrator, both building runbooks in Orchestrator as well as building custom integration objects in Orchestrator. So my websites that I've got up there are more related to my Team Foundation Server and my community work, but you're more than welcome to go check them out. I'd love for you to. I'll pop this slide up again at the end. Written a couple of books, mostly on stuff that this crowd may not care about as much, but writing a book is great. Everybody should do it once. Hit me up after the session, and I'll tell you all the good and the bad stories about that. So, we've got a lot to cover. I teach a 4-day class on Management Pack Development. So I've tried to take information from that 4-day class and break it down into some different areas. So I've made some assumptions in this talk in that you know what SCOM is, you know the basics of how SCOM works. It's a workflow engine, it's got health monitoring, blah, 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 blah. So I'm gonna talk about some different concepts as we go, but I may gloss over some things because I'm assuming you know things. Now, we're gonna approach this from just a general, I'm gonna do a real quick, this is what management packs are, just so we're all on the same page. I'm gonna talk briefly about some of the tools you can use, very briefly, and because what I'm wanting to show you from a tips and tricks perspective, it's not gonna really matter what tool you're using. So then I've got some basic tips, which is some basic stuff that we've encountered. Then some more advanced stuff. And then what I'm calling these expert tips, which are concepts that you really need to know about, but you probably are not necessarily gonna use on a daily basis. So we're gonna do all these things. So I've been telling people as they came in, stick with me, because even if some of the concepts, if I'm going through them so fast that it doesn't quite stick with you, knowing that concept is there in SCOM is going to help you when you're having to deal with people that are, when you're building your own management packs or people are building management packs for you. And like I said, at the end, we'll take questions or we'll move over here to the side and do questions. So, basic management pack. Management pack's an XML file. So, which is really kind of nice, because basically I can edit the management pack with anything I want to. And management packs are how you add functionality into SCOM. They're actually also how you add functionality into Surface Manager as well. So, you build these management packs however you want to build them, or you buy them, or you download them for free from Microsoft or people, and you use these management packs to add functionality. The basic idea is this. We've got stuff we want to monitor. So we're going to create classes that we want to monitor. Once we know what we want to monitor, then we've got to find out where does that stuff exist in our organization. To do that, we create discoveries. So we go discover our classes. See how the phrases work? Once we've discovered our classes, then we can actually monitor them. Then we can create those rules and those monitors to do things. So those rules and those monitors that you deal with a lot in the operations console, those are running against classes that you've discovered. That is now Management Pack 101. Thank you very much. So you also need to know that there's two kinds of management packs. There's a sealed management pack and an unsealed management pack. An unsealed management pack is what you initially create. It's just the XML file. You can open it up with a text editor. You can make changes. You can import it into Operations Manager, and you can actually use it as an unsealed management pack. But you also have the ability to take a management pack and seal it. And to seal a management pack, all you need is a key. And you don't have to have some fancy key from somebody. You just create your own key, sn.exe. And you can seal your management pack, turns it into a binary file with a .mp extension on it. That .mp, that means that basically it's a sealed management pack. You try to open that up in Notepad++ and you're going to get some really ugly stuff. The reason you want to seal management packs, people think the number one reason you want to seal management packs is to protect your intellectual property, and that's wrong. And I will show you why in a second. The number one reason you want to seal management packs is so that, A, I could give you a management pack, and you can put it in your system, and I know it's going to work exactly like I built it because you can't change it directly. And B, when management packs can reference other management packs, so access information in other management packs, but because of rules of the way SCOM works, I can only access information that's in a sealed management pack. So those are two reasons, those are two main reasons you want to seal a management pack. So let's look at this for a second. I'm going to jump back and forth between slides and demo. All right. Look at how organized I am. I even have demo files and structures. So I created a basic management pack using the 2007 authoring tool. I just said, create me a new management pack, and I saved it. And if I open this up in my favorite text editor, Notepad++, then I just want to kind of show you the basic structure real quick, just so you see it, which is we've got all management packs have a manifest section, okay? Now, some tips that you need to know about from this manifest section. The ID value that's in this management pack, this manifest section, has to match your file name. If your file name doesn't match that ID value, then your management pack is invalid and you can't import it. Because I was thinking, hey, I've got a great versioning idea. I'll just rename my management pack files to be version 1, version 2, version 3. Doesn't work because you break the schema, which means that you can't import the management pack. Management packs also have version numbers. Another tip, best practice, is you should always increase your version number anytime you make a change to your management pack. And you should build your management packs incrementally. So don't get all gung-ho and go build a management pack that's got 30 monitors and 50 rules and then try to import it, because if you do something wrong and it doesn't work, it's going to be a major pain in the butt to debug that. So what I do and what I recommend is a more agile aspect where you add in a monitor, make sure it works, increase the version number, add in a rule, make sure it works, increase the version number. So this is some tips to help you get going from that aspect. Management packs can reference other management packs. So here you can see I'm referencing the Microsoft System Center Library Management Pack. This is a sealed management pack. That's why I can reference it. If I tried to reference an unsealed management pack, it would actually tell me, no, you can't. So you'll end up referencing management packs as you build things. Now this is kind of cool though. This kind of annoyed me at first, but now I kind of like it. The way SCOM does localization is through this language packs area. So you'll notice I've got a language pack for English, and then I have a bunch of display strings. Each display string relates back to an element higher in the management pack, where then I specify the name and the description. So if you need to provide localization for your management pack for multiple languages, like say I need this to also be in French, all I have to do is open up my management pack, copy the language pack section, paste it right underneath it, change the ID from English to French or German, and then anywhere I have name and description, I just replace that with the appropriate whatever in French and German. Bam, localization, and it works. This is a very simple management pack. Works fine, that's great. So, however, one of the ways that I learned management pack development and one of the ways that's really helpful is to see what other people have done, right? Microsoft has a ton of management packs out there that they let you download for, you know, Exchange and SQL and all that. And sometimes you really want to kind of see, well, how did they do something? But the problem is those things are sealed. Now, you can actually open up the sealed ones in the 2007 authoring tool and look at them, and there's also a tool out there called MP Viewer for free that you can use to look at sealed management packs, but I prefer Notepad++. So, given that, I can't, in the authoring tool, if I go to administration, and we go to management packs, and I select a sealed management pack and right-click on it, I can't export it. It doesn't let you. However, if you go to PowerShell, that's a different story, but I have to. So, and they changed the PowerShell commandlet names in 2012. Thank you. So, if I say git sc management pack, that gets me a list of all my management packs. But then, if I pipe that into export sc management pack, that exports all the management packs. So then I can say where I want them exported to. So we'll call this my management packs, and just to make sure, we'll come out here to my C drive and create a new folder that we'll call NPS, just to show you that there's no smoke and mirrors. Move that over here, and we'll run that command. And what that command is going to do is it's going to go out and it's going to access SCOM and it's going to get a list of all the system center management packs and it's going to pass that into export management pack and it's going to write those management packs out to this MPS folder. Now what's cool is, check it out, it writes them out as unsealed. So when you export them using that PowerShell command, they're now unsealed, so now you can open those management packs and you can make, you can view them. I don't recommend you make changes and then try to import them back in, because that could just get all kind of confusing. But if we open up, say, this System Center 2007 management pack and look at it, then you start to see we have multiple sections, right? We've got manifest, we've got some section called type definitions, which we're actually going to talk about later. We've got the rules, we've got the tasks, we've got the monitors, diagnostics and recoveries. We've got an override section, we've got console tasks that we've added, language pack section, and even assemblies to where we've actually written custom assemblies that are, which are DLLs that we're loading up that SCOM's using in different rules. So, again, you can go from our very simple management pack to our very complicated management pack. And you can see the reason I like Notepad++. I like to be able to collapse and open back up all these different sections. You could do the same thing in Visual Studio 2010, but Notepad++ is just it's a little bit faster as far as that, because it doesn't have the overhead that Visual Studio 2010 does of all the rest of the development environment. So that's my Management Pack 101. So we all agree that Management Packs are... So takeaways from that are you got to make sure the ID field always matches the file name, and you can export and look at sealed management packs by using the PowerShell. So how do I go about building all these different management packs? Well, that's where you got to have the right tool for the job. So SCOM 2012 just came out. It's a really good product. And SCOM 2007 was out before that. With SCOM 2007, they released an authoring tool. And actually, it came as a resource kit. So if you get the authoring tool, you want to get the resource kit, because the resource kit has all kind of cool stuff like workflow analyzing, some stuff to help you debugging, best practice analyzers. You can use the 2007 authoring tool to build 2012 management packs. And in fact, that's the tool I'm going to be using for some of the stuff we do today. Caveat, they're not upgrading that tool. So they're not going to put anything in it to be special for 2012. They're not going to put anything in it to make fixes in the future. So the future of authoring with SCOM 2012 is, you can still do it with the operations console if you want to in the authoring tab. You can do basic management packs there. But there's a plug-in for Visio 2010. There's an extension that you can do in Visio 2010, which is going to let you do drag and drop. So it's kind of cool. I can drag and drop these objects. I link them together, fill out a couple of property windows, save it, bam, I have a management pack. Now, that'll let you build some basic to slightly complex management packs. If you have to build something really complex, that's where you have to go to Visual Studio. There's extensions in Visual Studio that will let you do some really cool stuff. And because it's Visual Studio, you can tie it back into Team Foundation Server for version control. You can tie it back into Team Build to automate building of your management packs. So every night you can do an automated compile of your management packs to make sure they work. So that really starts to get you into the whole application lifecycle management space. But at the end of the day, you're going to need a text editor, because you're ultimately going to end up in the XML. And that's where I like Notepad++. It's free, it works, it color codes. That's what I really, really like about it, is that it color codes. I've tried several different text editors. That's the one I've always come back to. So the stuff I'm going to be showing you today, we're mostly going to be using Notepad and the 2007 authoring tool. The extensions were announced to MMS. They're supposed to be available. Apparently, according to one of my audience members, if you know the right people, you can get it. But they're not publicly available for download yet. But they are coming, and that is going to be the authoring story of the future. That said, the stuff I'm going to show you over the next little bit is going to apply regardless of what tool you're using. So basic tips that I'm going to go through are targeting. So we're going to talk about why targeting is, why it's important. Management pack design, briefly, whether you want to have one management pack or a bunch of them. Version control, sealed management packs one more time. And then we're going to get into discovery scripts. Because remember, we have these classes, we want to discover them. We have multiple ways to discover them. One of them is using discovery scripts. There are some gotchas around discovery scripts that we want to make sure people are aware of. And then customizing rules and monitors, and specifically something that gets asked for all the time, which is, how do I make a rule only trigger an alert during business hours? It's actually pretty easy. Don't tell anyone. So targeting is the first thing we're going to talk about. From a targeting perspective, what I mean by that is when I create a rule or a monitor, I target it at a class. So when I create the rule, I say, oh, this is a rule that's going to target Windows Server Operating System. So it goes out to all the server operating systems. Or it's going to target Windows computers. So it targets all these different computers. Or it's going to target my custom class. A target is basically the thing I want to monitor. So here's the catch. You've got to be careful with your targeting. Because let's think about this. How is SCOM doing all this monitoring? It's got agents, right? Or unless you're doing agentless monitoring, but even that can bite you. But it's got agents on all these different machines. I only want to take my monitors and push them down to the machines that have the stuff on them that I want to monitor. Why take that monitor and push it over to these 10 machines when there's nothing on there that I care about? So this is where you've got to be careful with your targeting. So for example, if I want to monitor failed logon attempts on Windows computers, so I've written a monitor to monitor failed logon attempts on Windows computers. The question is, what do I target? Well, in my mind, logging into a computer is related to the operating system. So therefore, as my target, I'm going to choose the Windows Operating System class to push it out to all Windows operating systems. Now, if I wanted to get, if my criteria was just on servers, I could target Windows Server Operating System. Or if it was just 2003 servers, I could target Windows Server 2003 Operating System. Technically, I could even target Windows Computer instead of Windows Operating System, but I don't, stylistically, I don't like that because I find in this scenario, login is part of the operating system, so you target the class that it's appropriate. Things I've seen people do, which is bad, they target the agent. So I've got agents running on all these machines, right? So fine, I could target the agent. It'll push it out to all my computers, and it'll still watch for the login issues. Problems with that are agentless monitoring. If you've got machines that are monitored agentlessly, too bad. It's not going to pick it up. The other problem is this. I've targeted the agent. So if I find there's an issue with the login and I change it from a healthy state to a critical state, I'm not changing the Windows computer or the Windows operating system to a critical state. I'm changing the agent to a critical state, which therefore means that I'm getting alerts that my agent is having issues when it's not. So you've got to make sure you're targeting things correctly. I also don't want to use computer, because if I use computer, I could be targeting non-Windows computers at that point, which who knows what my monitor is going to do when it goes and tries to run on a Linux machine. So targeting is very, very important. And targeting is important both from discoveries, rules, and monitors. And the reason it's important is SCOM uses a hierarchy, okay? Classes have parent classes. It uses inheritance. So essentially, and this is kind of a dumbed-down version, but I've got operating system class. From that, I have a Windows operating system class that inherits from it. If I target a monitor at Windows operating system, at the class Windows operating system, it's going to push that monitor to all classes that I've discovered that are Windows operating system, as well as server, as well as client, as well as 2008, as well as XP, as well as Vista. It pushes it to everybody down the chain. So that's why you want to make sure you target as specific as possible. If I only care about Windows Server Operating System, I don't need to target top-level operating system. I need to target Windows Server Operating System, which then pushes that monitor out to 2008, 2003, 2012, whatever I have. I can't stress enough. I spent about an hour talking about targeting. I can't stress enough how important targeting is. Another tip, management pack design, one versus many. So what I mean is, do I have one big management pack that has all my classes, all my rules, all my monitors in it? Or do I have multiple management packs? Do I have one management pack that has all my classes for a particular monitoring scenario, and then a discoveries for those classes, and then a rules for those classes? How many people think I need one big management pack? No thoughts. How many people think I need multiple management packs? Interesting. Answer, it depends. So the nice thing about having one big management pack is it's all in one management pack. So I can easily just jump up and down and find what I need. The problem with having one big management pack is it's all in one big management pack. So as you've seen, these management packs can be tens of thousands of lines of code. So being able to find what you need can be a major pain. So I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, I'll go this route. Oh, if I need to update my classes, I just go to the class management pack. If I need to update my discoveries, I go to the discoveries management pack. Here's the caveat to that. The discoveries that are in the discoveries management, or better yet, the rules that are in the rules management pack target classes in my classes management pack. Okay? An unsealed management pack can only reference a sealed management pack. So what that means is, I have to take my classes management pack, build it, seal it, before I can then build my rules management pack. And then if I want to build a new class and a new rule for that class, I've got to go back to the unsealed version of my classes management pack, add in that class, seal it, and then I can go to my rules management pack and access that. So it adds to your process. That said, I find multiple management packs conceptually a lot easier to handle as far as so I know where to make my changes. If I'm building a quick and dirty management pack with just a couple of classes, a couple of rules, a couple of monitors, I do it all in one big. If I build a management, if I'm building a management pack that's going to be pretty big, like monitoring, say, WriteFax, I'll build a management pack for doing that, or monitoring a bigger system like McAfee, then I'm actually going to break it into multiple so that I can just more easily tear it down. But again, things to remember from that are the MP has to be sealed to reference it. So anytime I want to add a new class, I've got to go to the unsealed one, add it, seal it, before I can build monitors and discoveries for it, which, you know, adds to your development time a little bit. Like I said, sealing a manager pack is a 15-second process, but that can add up. Another tip to remember is you're doing development. I realize that some people in here may be developers, some people may be ID pros, but you're doing development. When you're building these management packs, you're doing actual development, so you need some sort of version control, okay? I'm not saying you have to use Team Foundation Server. It works great. But you need something. And the reason you need version control is because if you make a change to your management pack and then you import it and everything blows up, you want to be able to roll back to a previous version pretty quickly. So there's lots of version control options out there, but I'll be honest, the one that I use the most is what I call my poor man's version control system, which is basically just this. Dun, dun. Where'd we go? Go away. Which is basically just, I make a folder that's the name of my management pack. In that folder, I then make the version number of my management pack. Oh, look. When I'm ready to go to version 1.3, I just copy that sucker and paste it. Yes, I'm using, and I can rename this to be version 1.3, and then I can go in my management pack and I can edit it. And yes, I understand it's kludgy. Yes, I'm using a file system as my version control. But it's quick and dirty, and for building small management packs, it works great. And then that way, if I need to go back to version 1.2, or I make a ton of changes to version 1.3 and I can't figure out what's going wrong, I can easily just go back and find version 1.2. So, but you need to do something to track your changes, which goes back to what I said before. You need to build your management packs incrementally. Add a little bit, test it. Add a little more, test it. Whoa, wrong one. There we go. Wait. There we go. So, let's talk discoveries, okay? We've got classes that we need to monitor, okay? We've got these classes out there that we want to find. And if you open up the management packs that you get from other people, you're going to see that they've got classes, discoveries, and monitors. The reason I teach this class, and I talk about this and love this, is because you can build your own custom monitoring in SCOM, and that's what we're doing. So to do that, I've got to first identify what I want to monitor, okay? So to identify what I want to monitor, I've got to build a class for it. Then I've got to figure out, how do I know is that thing installed on a particular computer? Do I look in the registry? Do I do a WMI query? Do I look for log files or services that are running? And SCOM has a bunch of built-in stuff to do discoveries. Okay, so it has registry discoveries, which are great. If you can use the built-in registry, that's another tip. If you can use the built-in registry discoveries to discover whether your application or what you're trying to monitor is there, you should always use the registry discoveries first. Why? Because they're fast, right? We like things that are fast. It's also got WMI queries that you can use. You can run a WMI query. Catch with a WMI query is the only time that can mess you up is if your WMI database gets corrupted. Anybody in here dealt with a corrupted WMI database? Yeah, that can be a pain. However, you always have the option of scripting. Scripting is the most powerful thing you can do. It's also the most dangerous thing you can do. It's also the most resource-intensive thing you can do. However, if you're going to build a discovery script, then there's a couple of things you should know. First off, almost all discovery scripts look exactly the same. So here's the basic outline. You will be able to use this basic outline for any discovery script that you're going to create, which is, first thing you got to do is set up a couple of objects. I've got to get access to the API, the SCOM API. So I basically do a create object, and you'll notice that the SCOM API is called mom.scriptapi, as a throwback from mom 2005. But I get a reference to this API object in my script, and then I create a discovery data object. I create an object that's going to hold the stuff that I find. Now, I've got three parameters that I pass into my discovery data object. One is a zero. It's always a zero. It will forever be a zero. You just make it a zero. That's a throwback from mom 2005. You just put a zero there and move on. And then I have to pass in this source ID and this managed entity ID. I'll come back to those in a second, and we'll explain what those are. But you, when you create your discovery data, you pass in a zero, you pass in this source ID and this managed entity ID, which we'll talk about in a second. Once I've created my objects, what you don't see hidden is my business logic. This is where I'm going out and looking in the registry, or looking for services, or looking wherever I'm doing to determine, is my class installed on this machine? Once I've finished checking whether the class is installed on the machine or not, I then, if I find the class, I can create an instance of that class. So I'm going to call my discovery data object, I'm going to create an instance, and I'm going to say where class name is, I'm going to put the actual ID value from the management pack of the class I'm trying to discover. If that class has properties I need to set, then on that class instance, I'm going to set multiple properties, and then I take that instance and do an add instance to put it in the discovery data. So we create our discovery data object, we find our stuff, we create the class instance, put it back in the discovery data object, and the very last step is we return the discovery data object. Don't forget that step, because then nothing will work. So you have to return your discovery data object. This is the basic discovery script that basically you can cut and paste and slap your business logic in the middle and will work for you. Now, some tips around using discovery scripts that can come back and get you. First off, let's talk about that source ID and managed entity ID. The source ID is the workflow ID. And what I mean by that is it is the GUID value of the discovery that's running right now. So that discovery in SCOM, if you go look in the databases, it's got a GUID value. And what we need is that GUID value. So the way you get that is you pass in this MP element into the script. So when you define the script parameters, you say $MP element $. And then SCOM's smart enough to know, oh, I'm referring to the discovery that's running, so let me get its GUID value. Case sensitive. All these variables are case sensitive because it's all XML behind the scenes. So you mistype the case, it's going to blow up. Managed entity ID is the actual thing that I've targeted with this discovery. So say Windows Server Operating System is targeted with this discovery. So I need the ID of what I'm targeting, hence target slash ID. I always want to type ID as a capital I, capital D. It won't work. It's case sensitive. These are the two. So basically, in any of your discovery scripts, you're always going to put $MP element $. You're always going to put $target/ID $. Now, here's the one thing people forget about with their discovery scripts. You always have to return a discovery data object, even if you don't find anything. So you, in your discovery scripts, you always have to create a discovery object and return that discovery object, whether you find an instance of the class or not. And that's because discoveries are responsible for determining when classes exist and when they no longer. So I run a discovery, I find my application, I start monitoring it. That discovery runs the next day, I've uninstalled the application. So I uninstall the application, I run that discovery again, the discovery goes, oh, that application is no longer here. I'm going to return a blank discovery object. SCOM goes, well, there used to be one here. There's not one here anymore because you returned an empty discovery object. I'm going to remove that class from SCOM and move on. So discoveries are what help you determine when stuff exists and when it no longer exists. If you don't return a discovery, return a blank discovery object, SCOM will never know when something doesn't exist anymore. You always want to target your discoveries as specifically as possible. Dahlia talked about targeting. You also want to limit how often your discoveries run. Discoveries are the most intensive thing you can do. When you're testing them, you should set those suckers to run every 60 seconds. Okay? Here's the problem. In production, unless you've got a best case, you really only want your discoveries to run, best practice is usually once a day, because things aren't changing that much. You may have an application where it needs to run more than that, but you usually only want to do it once a day. So keep that in mind. When you're testing, you have them run fast, but don't forget to change it before you move to production. How you make sure you've changed it is before you move anything to production, you run the best practice analyzer against it, because one of the things the BPA will catch is, oh, I didn't change my discoveries back from 60 seconds. And finally, how do I debug this script? How do I debug my rules and my monitor scripts that I create? Well, there's no good way. The best way is to use this what's called the log script event. So Scott, the agent has an operations manager event log on it. So I can use this log script event to write out to that event log. So I pepper my script with these log script events, and I'm going to show you an example of that in just a little bit. Then I'm able to actually then go to the event log and at least see, oh, I got this far in my script before it blew up, and that'll help me kind of debug it. But I don't have a nice debugger where I can step through and do different things like that. All right, so one thing you get asked about a lot is, how do I actually, I've got a monitor, okay? So I've got a monitor where I'm monitoring a log file. Great, I'm monitoring a log file for whatever. But I only want that log file to, no, I've got a rule, not a monitor. So I've got a rule, an alerting rule that's going to throw an alert. But I only want to throw an alert during business hours. So I want to keep reading that log file. So I want to keep reading it. So even at night, I keep reading it. But if I find whatever criteria that throws the alert at night, I don't care. I only care about doing it during business hours. If you're using the authoring tool, I can create a monitor that monitors that log file, but the wizard itself doesn't help me with the whole wanting to set the business hours aspect. So this is something we actually get asked a good bit. So I'm going to show you how you do it. So here is the 2007 authoring tool. Wait, nope. Now we have the 2007 authoring tool. So I've got a pre-built management pack, of course. Where I've built an alerting rule. And so what this rule does is it monitors a log file. And when I find the word, again, well, it's kind of simplistic, but not really. Because when I find the word error somewhere in a line of that log file, I want to throw an alert. So if I, and I can actually create this rule by going new alerting text log. And in the authoring tool, it'll actually walk me through. So I specify the log file, what my expression is. I can configure my alert. If I go back and look at this, though, the one I've pre-created, remember, we're starting to look behind the covers of how SCOM works. SCOM's a workflow engine. So that means that you've got workflows that you create, and those workflows are made of different modules. So in this case, a rule is made up of data sources, condition detections, and write actions. We're going to come back to those. But that shouldn't be there because that was from running this last night. So basically, when I create my initial log file monitor, what I've got is my log file monitoring, which I'm looking in directory demo 4. I'm monitoring for demo 4.log. And if I find a line in that file, and the way you access a line in the file is by saying param /param(1). That didn't used to be documented. But that basically returns the line that it's currently reading from the log file. And the log file reader is freaking great in SCOM because it keeps track of where you are in the log file for you and everything. You don't have to worry about that. But I'm basically saying if that line contains the word error, then I want to throw an alert. So if that line contains the word error, then I'm going to generate an alert. And so here's my generate an alert, which is really fancy. it basically says, I found an error in the Acme log file. Log file monitoring, everyone, you've probably created log file monitors, nothing super fancy there. Now, here's a little tip to keep in mind when you're doing log file monitoring, which is the SCOM reader or monitor or reader of the log files doesn't pick up a new line on that log file until there's a carriage return line feed at the end of it. So if you're writing out to the log file and you don't put a carriage return line feed at the end of it, it won't pick up that line that you've written out. So that's something to keep in mind. That's actually something we encountered at our customer. The monitors weren't working correctly, and it's because they weren't putting carriage return line feeds at the end. Now, I'm going to come in here and do, can you hold that question? Don't forget it. Write it down. Don't forget it. So I'm going to come back in here to my monitoring section, and I'm going to go over here to my active alerts real quick. And we'll just take all these and close them. Hey, look, I don't have any work to do. So let's come back out here to my log file, and I'll open this up. And again, if I just type some stuff, and then I type the word error, it's in the middle somewhere, and I do a return, then ultimately what should happen is I've already got this monitor preloaded. So ultimately what should happen is it should catch this, and it should return give me an error back. So it may not now because I may not have the right one loaded, but anyway, that's what should happen. Now, I only want this to trigger during business hours, okay? So the way you can do that is you have to add in a condition detection module. So the condition detection module that I want to add in this case, is going to be a schedule filter. So there's a module, condition detection module called system.scheduleFilter. Now, when you're adding it in, this frustrated me the first time I tried to do this, because I'm like, wait, I've selected it. I can't click OK. You have to give it an ID value. So I got to give it an ID value, and I'll click OK. And then I've got to actually edit it. Luckily, I have this little configure button here. And so I have the option. I can say always process data, which means that it's going to flow it through no matter what. Or I can say only process data during a specified time. Or I can say process data except during the specified time. So if I want to say only process this data during business hours, I can come in here and add a schedule. So I can say, we're going to say my business hours are 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I did. It would catch it. Not at all. Thank you. And then I can actually exclude days. You can come in here and say there are also days that don't apply in the schedule. But what's going to happen is, I'm going to click OK. It's going to keep reading that log file. So even 8, 9 o'clock at night, it's going to keep reading the log file. But when it finds the word error at 9 o'clock at night, it's going to go, oh, I'm not within the schedule. I don't care. And I want to move on. So keep that in mind. It doesn't stop the monitor at 5 o'clock. It just doesn't do anything with the data. No, it will not. So you're basically saying I don't care at that point, which a lot of people, that's what they say. They don't care. So let's go back over here and we'll change the version number. Let's import this because here's the other thing. How do you know, and this is really a pain, especially when you're testing. How do you know that the latest version of your management pack has actually been pushed down to the server or the computer that you're testing on? Anybody know? You know? There you go. So let's import this puppy. So we're going to go back over here. I can actually import from the authoring tool as well. But we'll import this. I'm going to go add from disk because it's not in the catalog. And there's the one I just updated. And you'll notice it tells me that I've got the previous one already imported. Yes, that's what I want. So, like I said, we're now at the mercy of SCOM and when it decides it wants to actually do its thing with this. There are some things you can do to speed up pulling down a management pack to a specific agent. If you stop the agent and restart the agent service, then the agent goes, oh, hey, I just started. Let me go to SCOM and make sure I've got all the latest stuff. And that's one way to make it pull it down. So that's one thing you should do if you don't see your management pack. The other thing you should do is if you don't see your management pack getting pushed down to your agent is make sure all of your SCOM services on your SCOM servers are started. Because, will you hold that question for me? I'm pushing my limit. Don't forget it. So, but what you can look for in the event log is, look, there's an operations manager event log. And what I can look for in that event log is a 1201, which indicates that the manager pack has been pushed down to this particular agent. In this case, I'm running on all on one machine, and the version number. And then after that, you want to look for a 1210. So you look for a 1201 followed by a 1210. A 1210 means the agent's picked it up, worked its magic, it's ready to do its thing. So now what we should see, again, if I come back over to my little event log here and type some stuff, I do a carriage return line feed. Wait, did I do a carriage return line feed? I did. Then what we should see, and we'll come back in a second, because I am running this all on one VM, so it's a little slow. We should come back and we should see that error message, okay? But the takeaway I want you to take from this is that I'm able to go into these things, into these rules especially, and I'm able to modify them from how I initially build them by putting together these different modules in SCOM. And if I actually come out and look at this rule, so if we go back out here and open this up, then here's my rule that I created. That's a little big. And you can see that rule is made up of this data source, which is reading from the event from the log file. Then that data source passes this information into this condition detection. So here's the condition detection information, which then passes information into the write action. So one of the ways you can learn manager pack development, as far as if you ever want to start doing stuff in the XML, is make some changes in your tool, authoring tool of choice, like 2007 tool or whatnot, and then, or even in the SCOM authoring console or operations console, and then export it, and then open it up in a notepad and look at the XML. Editing the XML is nice. You're going to want to edit the XML at some point because it can be, you can make bulk changes really fast. And if you know your way around the XML, you can make major changes really fast. Caveat of that is it's XML. You type one thing wrong and it's going to break. So keep that in mind. All right, let's go back real quick and just see if this thing has actually thrown an alert for me. Of course it hasn't. Well, in Mickey's perfect world, we would have an alert. We'll move on. So you saw how the rule was made up of data sources, condition detections, write actions. This is where we start getting into some of the more advanced stuff now, okay? So I want to talk briefly about a couple of advanced authoring concepts, and then I want to show you how you can actually build some of this advanced stuff by building your own custom data source and your own composite unit module. Who in here has built custom data sources in SCOM? Sweet. Who's built custom unit monitors? Sweet. Awesome, awesome. So behind the scenes, everything's a workflow. SCOM's a workflow engine. That's how I like to refer to it. And ultimately, all the stuff, discoveries, rules, monitors, diagnostics, recoveries, all that stuff are made up of these four module types. Now, you'll see these different module types when you go into, you saw them. Like when I went into the authoring tool and I was adding in my condition detection. I had a whole big list and then I filtered it down to the specific condition detection that I care about. So we have these four types. And these types go together in a certain way, depending on whether I'm trying to create a discovery or a rule or a monitor. They have certain rules around them, like a data source can't take stuff into it, but it passes stuff out. Probe actions can take one piece of input in and pass that one piece of input out. Condition detections, write actions have their own rules. And then these things go together in different ways. So for example, to make a rule is made up of one or more data sources, one or more condition, or zero or one condition detections, and one or more write actions. So I can have multiple data sources that gather data for me, but I can only have one condition detection. And you can actually see that enforced in the authoring tool here because I can't click that create button anymore. So That's just the rules. That's how rules work. I can have one or more data sources, one condition detections, and one or more write actions. Monitors are set up a different way. Discoveries are set up a different way. But essentially, behind the scenes, all this stuff is made up of those modules. So this is where you could start taking because knowing this concept that it's made up of these different modules, you could start building your own custom data sources, your own custom monitors to do specific things. So this is the scenario that I encountered with a customer that I'm going to show you how we solved, which is going back to the log file monitoring, okay? Log file monitor is great, right? So I had a customer that had a specific type of data or a specific log file that they wanted to monitor. And I've dumbed it down a little bit. But essentially what they wanted to have was they had a line in the log file that basically had a date time value, a pipe symbol, had a counter name, like counter one, and then it had the value of that counter, like 50. So this thing would have multiple rows in it, and this might be counter 2, and this might be 75. They wanted to create a monitor or a rule that would alert when certain counters in this log file were over a certain value. The problem is, using the regular log file monitor that I showed you earlier, I can't do that because there's no good way for me to be able to, because then they also wanted to extract the value and just put the value in the alert. They didn't want to put the whole line from the log file. They just wanted the value. And I can't do that with a regular log file monitor. There's no criteria there to be able to parse it. So I was thinking, okay, I could write a script that'll just read from the log file. No. What's the bad idea of that is if I make a script monitor to read from the log file, that means my script monitor has to be able to keep track of where it last was in the log file. Now, you can do that. You can write stuff out to the registry and try to persist state that way, but you seriously don't want to go there unless you have to. There's a lot of variables you have to take into account. So what I'm thinking is, let's try this. What if I use the log reader to read in the line from the file and then pass that into a script? The log reader will keep track of where I am in the log file, but the script will do all the heavy lifting. So that's what I did. So then I got to the point of, okay, that works. So, but now what you're saying is, anytime I wanted to create a rule, I had to create a new rule, add in the log reader, add in my script, copy over my script. So I'm making copies of my script in multiple places. That's not good code reuse. If I got to update my script, I'm kind of hosed. All right, because I got to update that script in every rule. So what I did is I created a custom data source. So I've actually got a data source that, you know, the guy building the management pack now can just plop on there, fill out a couple of parameters, and bam, it will monitor the log file and parse it through the script. So I'm going to show you how I built that, and I'm also going to show you while I'm doing that how you can go about debugging these scripts using both that write out to the log event file as well as another tip. So that's the scenario. So let's actually see how we build this scenario. So if I come back into my authoring tool, that is not what I wanted. We're going to go over here and open up this custom data source. So down here in the type library area of the tools where I can build my custom data source. And I build a custom data source by right-clicking, saying new custom data source. And then it's going to have the same kind of windows that I see when I open my pre-built one. Okay? So my custom data source is going to consist of two things. It's going to consist of the generic log reader. Okay? This is a pre-built, built-in thing that reads from the log file. So I can add it. I mean, if I wanted to add it here, I just look for generic log reader. And there it is. Now, I got to configure the generic log reader. But check this out. I don't want to go ahead and say monitor /demo6. I want to make it where when somebody uses this data source in their rule, they can use it in their rule and enter their own information. So how many people in here have configured overrides on monitors in SCOM? How many people in here have ever wondered, well, why can I override some things in one monitor but not the other? You're about to see why. What I've done here is I've created a configuration parameter, okay? So when somebody uses this data source, they're actually going to see a parameter called log file directory. And then, and the way I say that I want this to be a configuration parameter is I say $config/whatever name I want to give it. So what I'm doing is setting up parameters that then the user is going to be able to enter when they use this custom data source. I do the same thing with my probe action. So I've created a probe action here that's called a script property bag probe. Because what my script, so what my monitor is ultimately going to do is you're going to specify the counter you want to look for in the log file line, and you're going to specify what the error value might be. And the script is going to actually check. And if the value on that log file line is greater than the error value, it's going to say, hey, I'm in a critical state. And you're going to throw an alert. Now, so what I'm using is this property bag probe provider. A property bag is just a variable. It's a name-value pair. So what this script is going to do is it's going to return a bunch of name-value pairs. And then I can evaluate those further down in my rule to determine if I have an issue or not. But if I look at my script here, again, I have a bunch of config stuff. I'm going to let the user specify the script name just so they can. I have arguments that I'm passing in here. So I'm passing in the script name, I'm passing in the line from the log file, I'm passing in the counter name, I'm passing in the error value, which I want to check to see if the value of the counter is greater than. And then, this is a lovely feature of the current tool. Sometimes you have to resize the window. I'm also passing in this debug value. That's something special to me. Just keep hold that thought. So what I've done here is I've said I want to use the log reader, and then I want to use my script. I want to take the line from the log reader, and once the log reader does its thing, I want it to call my script, and then my script is going to output the information. So if I had multiple other things here, I specify what module is next so it knows how to chain these things together. Configuration area is where all those things where I said $config log file directory, $config whatever, this is where I specify what the types are and if they're required or not. And for each of those parameters, I can specify which ones can be overridden. So when I'm building this custom data source or building a custom unit monitor, I can control what the end user can override. So this is why when you're doing overrides in SCOM, you see some things can be overridden and some things can't, because they've been exposed. And ultimately, the output from this data source is going to be this property bag. Now, let's look at the script. So if we go and look at the script, that is not where I want to be. Give me 1 second. Too many windows. Seriously, too many windows. If we go and look at the script, here's my script, okay? My script is basically saying, here's the API object, create a property bag to hold whatever results I'm going to return. I'm actually checking to see if I've got 5 objects passed in. If I don't, then I throw an error. Then I actually get those objects and put them in variables. And here's where I'm setting some variable called turn on debug. That's because in all of my scripts, I include a function called debug output. This allows end user or allows you to create an override to turn on debugging on a script or on a rule or a monitor so you can see whether it's more information on where it's working or not. Because if you turn debug on, I'm going to write a bunch of stuff out to the event log. A bunch of stuff, because I'm going to put those things every other line. However, if you don't want that to happen because you don't want to clutter up your event log, then you turn debugging off for most parts, and you turn it on if you think there's an issue. So by in that parameter that I pass in a true or false, and that turns it on or off. Now you'll notice here that I've got a section right to the console and right to the event log. When I'm trying to write this script and debug this script, I don't want to have to write the script, put it in a management pack, import it into SCOM, see if it works. I want to test it on my local machine. So I can do that by writing stuff out using wscript.echo to write out to, say, the console line. Here's the problem. The problem is this script is accessing API information. So, and if you run this script on machines that don't have an agent installed on them, it's not going to work. It's going to error out saying, I don't know what you're talking about. So the way you get around that is if you run this script on a machine that has a SCOM agent on it, it will run correctly, it will output the information, and you'll even see the resulting XML data that's going to get passed down so you can determine whether it's passing down the right data or not. And all I'm doing in this script is I'm saying, take the line from the log file and split it. And once you split the line from that log file, is this the counter that I care about? If it's the counter that I care about, am I greater than that error value? If I am, then I'm in an error state. So I've got a variable or a property bag called result that I'm going to set to error, and I'm going to pass back this information. Otherwise, my result's just going to pass back a blank. So if this script returns a property bag with a value of result that equals error, I know I've got an issue. I want to trigger my alert. Now, to test this script, I've got it set to where it's at the console. That's great. I can come out here, and this was a cool tip I learned last year. If you're in Windows Explorer and you want to open a command prompt to directly where you are in Windows Explorer, you just come right up here and you type CMD. That was a cool little tip that I learned. I didn't know before. I thought that was cool. So if I want to test this script, I can just say C script, my script name, and then all the different things I want to pass in. So I would be giving this, I would be giving the rule a name. Let's see, what else would I be giving? I would be giving the line from the file, so the line from the file might be some sort of date time, piped counter 1, piped 50, and then I've got the counter name that I care about. So in this case, let's say I'm looking for counter 1, and let's say I'm looking for counter 1 greater than 35, and do I want debugging turned on or off? Yes, I want debugging on. So by running that on a machine that has an agent on it, it gives me the output, which I know is a little small. So basically, you can see I've got debug statements written throughout my entire script, so I can see what's going on. And here's the resulting information. Sorry about that. Here's the XML that's returned that contains the data. So you can see I've got result is error, and then I've got my counter name and what my counter name was, and I've got my counter value and what my counter value was. If we run this again, but let's say we're looking for counter 2, then this time you can see that my result's empty, which is what we expect. So my rule's working. So a tip takeaway from this is you can test your scripts and monitors, but you've got to do it on a machine with an agent. Other tip and takeaway is you want to be able to write this stuff out either the console. But when I move this script into my management pack, I want to make sure I come down here and change my debug function to be, I want to comment these two lines out and uncomment that. So this builds my custom data source. So now to use that custom data source in a rule, I would come over here, I would create a new rule, and I would actually go looking for my custom data source. There it is, and I would add it. And when I add in that custom data source, I have parameters that I fill out. I don't have to know there's a script behind it doing these things. I don't have to know how it works. Me as the person consuming this, it's just an object I drop on there, and I fill out what I'm looking for. And I think I have this guy already loaded. If we go back into Operations Manager and go to Manager Packs, I do have it already loaded. So if we look at how I've configured this, I've got debugging turned on, and I'm looking for counter 1 is to be greater than 75. So what I can do, because I've got that debugging turned on, if I come back out here to where I'm doing that log file is being monitored and open it up and add in a new line, and save this. Then we see a bunch of 5,000 error messages. That's my event number that I'm writing out. So if we go back over to where I was, and then we can see the information. My custom script, here's the line from the file, boom, 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 pulls it in. So it's working. So this is how, once you've got something inside a SCOM that you need to debug, you've got to use that log script event. So you want to write things out to the operations manager event log. That's the only good way to do it. Now when you're testing it, you can test it local, but then you've got to pass the data in that you want. But as long as you're testing on an agent, then you can see the XML that's related to that. So I've built a custom data source now that I can use in my rules to be able to create these alert rules or you know, event rules or whatever, collection rules. Let's take this one step further. I now want to be able to monitor. I want to do the same thing, all right? I want to look for specific counters, specific values, but I want to do it from a monitor perspective because I want to change state. Remember, monitors are the only thing that can change state in a management pack, meaning I go from healthy to critical. Rules can throw alerts, but rules can't change state. Only monitors can. So if I want to change this to a monitor to where I will change the state of the object depending on what I find, I've got to create a custom composite monitor to do that. Now, I create custom composite monitors in about the same way. So again, I'm back in the authoring tool. But now I've got monitor types. Let's go up here and let's open up demo 6. So I've still got my condition detection that I created earlier. Reads the log, right? Passes that into a script. I've also got my monitor types now, though. I've got a custom monitor type that I've created. And in that custom monitor type, I can make it two state or three state. So I can make it healthy critical. I can make it healthy warning critical. And the cool thing about this is that depending on how you code it, you can make it where it's smart enough to realize, oh, I'm in a healthy state again, and flip itself back healthy. It depends on your scenario. But I have to specify my states, so I always name them healthy and critical. Then I have to specify the modules that make up this monitor. Well, I know I want to read from that file, and I want to use my script to parse it, so why not make use of my custom data source that I've already built? I didn't have to. I could have just redone everything in here with the log reader and everything, but I'm reusing my custom data source. And again, I'm specifying the different config parameters that somebody can declare on this data source. But then I've also added in two expression filters, one that determines whether I'm healthy, one that determines whether I'm in a critical state. If I open up this expression filter, then what this expression filter is going to do is it says, hey, I know that data source returns property bags. That property bag has a variable in it called result. The result's going to either equal, it's going to either have a value of error or a value of something. If that property bag, let's blow this up a little bit. If that property bag, open bracket, at name equals single quote, variable name, close single quote, close bracket. That's how you access the property bag in this filter. If it equals healthy, I assume I'm in a healthy state. And then for my critical expression is that if it equals error, then I assume I'm in a critical state. So I'm going to have my data source that gets the data. I'm going to have my expressions that determine whether I'm healthy or critical. Now I have to specify, for a healthy state, which of these modules do I care about? So for a healthy state, if I select healthy, I want to use my data source and my healthy expression. I want to start with my data source, then go to my healthy expression, then output the information. For my critical state, I want to go from my data source, go to the critical expression, then output the information. You've got to remember to select healthy and specify it, to select critical and specify it, or whatever you've declared these to be. Otherwise, it won't get configured correctly. On demand, we'll come back to. And then I specify my configuration data, and I specify what can be overridden. So at this point, I have a composite unit monitor that I can use. So if I go back over here and say, hey, let's create a new monitor. So I've created a new monitor here. And the way I created this is I right-clicked, I said new, I said custom unit monitor. and I select that composite unit monitor that I created. So we open it up. Then here's my configuration information. Again, I don't have to know how this sucker's working. And the beauty of this is, if my script ever changes, oh, dang it, I coded something wrong, all I have to do is go to my custom data source, change the script, and it gets updated for all of the rules that are using it, and it gets updated in this monitor that's using it, and it all just works. So some things to remember when you're doing this, though, is you've got to fill this out. You've also got to come over here to the Health tab and specify which state's going to be healthy and which state's going to be critical. And then you can specify alerting if you want to, and then, of course, there's always diagnostics and recovery. But creating your own custom data sources allows you to reuse your scripts or allows you to reuse the way you've a certain data source in multiple rules. Then you can take that data source, put it in a monitor, and then you've got custom monitoring. So you can just, you know, like I said, this is some really cool stuff that a lot of people don't know that you can do. And once you do it once or twice, you're like, oh, okay, that kind of makes sense. And then you can import this in, and you could import this in, and you know, we add a line to the log file, and we should see us change to into an unhealthy state. So that's our advanced. You're all still with me. Excellent. So we got one other thing I want to talk about. Which is some expert tips and tricks. Now, this is some really cool stuff that we're going to go through kind of quick, but you just need to know about that it's there, okay? And that's cookdown, on-demand detection, and some things to consider if you need to support agentless monitoring. So here's the thing. Scripts are the most intensive thing you can do, right? So operations manager can sometimes realize when multiple monitors or rules are ultimately using the same script. So if I've got five monitors that are using the same back-end script, if the stars are aligned and everything is exactly like it needs to be, it will only run that script once and then pass that information into all five monitors. There's a lot of rules around this, around how making this work. But that's called cookdown. That's called making it where it uses a data source one time, but populates multiple rules and monitors with it, which, as you can imagine, saves cycles. Real quick example of cookdown. I've got a monitor called Custom Monitor 1. Custom Monitor 1 is made up of this data source, this custom probe or this probe action, and this condition detection. I've got a monitor called Monitor 2, which uses a custom data source I've created and then does some kind of schedule filter. And then I've got a rule that uses this custom data source. You don't have a mouse. So I've got, and then finally my custom data source, if you look at my custom data source, looks exactly like my custom monitor one at the top. So the custom data source is made up of those three modules at the bottom, which are the exact same three modules that we have at the top. And then I have a second monitor that uses this custom data source, as well as a rule that uses this custom data source. So when SCOM, and this is actually this is a good thing to have for your slide decks. That's why I put it on the slide so it didn't get taken out. In SCOM, for each workflow, it builds what's called an execution chain, and basically it takes your workflows and breaks them down piece by piece by piece by piece. And what you end up finding out when we put this together and we replace where custom monitor 2 and custom alert rule had that custom data source, when we replace those with what makes up that custom data source, start looking down from top to bottom in that first column. It's all the same thing. Look at the second column. It's all the same thing. Look at the third column. It's all the same thing. So, and again, I'm dumbing this down a little bit, but it's for speed's sake. But basically what we're saying is, all three of these two monitors in this rule are all using the same objects in that first three lines. So that means I can just run that once and pass the information to those three monitors or rules. The only way this works, though, is if all the parameters that each of these monitors pass into that are exactly the same. And that means how often it runs, so they got to all be on the same timer every 60 seconds. Any other information you pass in are all the same. But that's going to save you time because you're able to, well, not save you time, but it's going to save you process cycles on SCOM and make things run a little more efficiently because it only has to run that set of data sources once and passes that into multiple values. So I'll come back if we get a chance to show that, but that's basically the actual what's going on there. I want to talk about on-demand detection. How many people have looked in Health Explorer and seen that recalculate health button? How many people have punched that button and wondered, wait, what? What's going on? So your monitors have to be built a certain way for the recalculate health button to work. If they're not built correctly, then you punch that recalculate health button, and it goes, okay, and then it doesn't do anything, and you don't know it, and then you're like, well, why isn't the freaking thing resetting? Because we're in a healthy state. What's going on? So on the unit monitor, on the custom monitor tab, there was an on-demand field. So I kind of glossed over that, but that's where you specify the way the modules need to go together to do on-demand detection. Now, the catch is on-demand detection has to start with what's called a probe module, not a data source module. So for the log monitor that we created, there's no good way to do on-demand detection. But if you're going to configure on-demand detection, you've got to do it with a probe module, not a data source module. One of the nice things, if you have in your custom unit monitors configured the on-demand detection, then when you come out of maintenance mode, those monitors will automatically recalculate to see where things stand. Otherwise, they won't. One thing to keep aware of, though, is if I punch that recalculate health on a monitor that's happening on multiple instances, or it's going to trigger multiple instances of that monitor, then, you know, if you've got a ton of instances that are all going to suddenly start recalculating all on the same box, then that might cause some issues, something to consider. And then finally, some things to consider around agentless monitoring. If you have to write any apps to do agentless monitoring, there's lots of different reasons you might have to. In fact, the management pack for Service Manager does agentless monitoring. So SCOM does agentless monitoring of Service Manager because the agents for Service or the services for Service Manager and SCOM don't play nice. The SCOM agent on Service Manager can sometimes cause an issue. There's reasons why. But you need to make sure, like in your module, you set remoting equal to true. If you're using scripts, don't use localhost, because then it's going to run on the thing over here that's doing the monitoring. It's not going to run on the actual thing you care about, and don't use dot. And you want to make sure any APIs that you use are going to support remote execution as well. So in summary, we've covered a whole bunch of information. We've talked about the basics of structure. We've talked about the different tools you're going to want to use. You want to look at the Visio extensions and the Visual Studio extensions. Like I said, they should be available for download pretty soon. Belson told me they would be. And Belson, actually, I think will send you a link if you want them. We covered all this stuff, so some basic tips, some more advanced tips, some expert tips. More information, you can pull down my slide deck for this information. There's the MP Dev Kit out there. There's a link to the SCOM SDK. There's a wiki with a bunch of documentation around MP Dev. Some people that you want to watch for, though, Matthew Long, works with me, helped me put this together. Oh, my gosh. He wrote all that cookdown stuff. He is a freaking amazing guy. Pete Zerger, who runs System Center Central. System Center Central is a great place to go for information. And then Brian Wren, who works for Microsoft, who's been documenting all this MP stuff for years. You can find him at MP Arthur. Good information out there. Again, I want to give a special thanks to Matthew. And my information, you're more than welcome to send me an email. I'll be happy to help you anytime you need it. Shoot me an email. I'll try to get back to you, try to answer your questions. I love doing this stuff. And fill out an eval. Evals are important. I look at those things. Everybody looks at those things. So please, please, please take 2 minutes to go outside and fill out an eval and let me know what you think of the course. I appreciate y'all coming. Thank you very much. Give me 2 minutes to tear down, and I'll answer questions over here on the side. Otherwise, enjoy your last day.